Hello! Welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, and today's guest, Coot Blackson, absolutely demolished this conversation. I think this episode may have set a record for fewest words spoken by me. He is the son of a preacher man, and he brought the fire and the wisdom and the stories today. This conversation is so good. Like, if you're listening to this and you're like, I've never heard of this guy, I don't know if I want to check out this episode, check out this episode. It's so fucking good. Legit, this guy just is like a rocket ship to your heart. Blast off. Namaste. Wowzers. Holy moly. Coot is a speaker. He's an author. He's a coach. He leads retreats. He's been on the Larry King Show. He's been on NPR, and Dr. Drew has had a conversation with him. He's done a lot. He's been a lot. And I thoroughly recommend that you enjoy this conversation with Coot Blackson. This episode is brought to you by Cured Nutrition. Cured is the leader in CBD supplementation with an entire line of products designed to take your everyday life to its ultimate potential. Their daily staples are formulated with an in-house clinical herbalist, which has taken the traditional CBD regimen to an entirely new level of optimization. If you're anything like me, you like waking up feeling good and living well. You've probably toyed around with the idea of finding healthy alternatives to jumpstart your morning. Personally, it's why I start my day with Cured Rise, which is their focus supplement. It's a powerhouse blend of functional mushrooms like lion's mane and cordyceps, broad-spectrum CBD, and powerful adaptogens. It gives me clean, clear, and sustained energy without any of the caffeine jitters or crash that I get with coffee. After I get going, Aura is next. It's another blend of functional mushrooms, CBD, and adaptogens, but it's got a twist. We all know how important it is to sustain our immunity nowadays, and this covers all of my bases. The vitamin D prebiotics, crucial antioxidants, are delivered straight to the gut, which is the foundation of our emotional and physical health. Am I right? Second brain. It's where the majority of our serotonin production and immune function begin, or it keeps everything in check, performing at its best, so I have one less thing to worry about, and I obviously cannot forget Zen. I use it every night. It is certainly why it has become Cure's number one selling relaxation and sleep product. You know the long nights spent tossing and turning? Yeah, not with this stuff. It has ingredients like reishi mushroom, ashwagandha, magnesium, passion flower, broad spectrum CBD. So thankfully, restlessness is something of the past. Cured Nutrition products are your answer for a daily dose of health. Visit curednutrition.com. That's C-U-R-E-D nutrition.com. Be sure to use the coupon code LOVEBOMBS, and at the checkout, you will save 10% off your order. That's the right button. All right. Coot Blackson, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, brother, I'm stoked to talk to you. I've read your previous book and I've followed you online for a while. But for those who are listening right now that have never heard of Coot Blackson, do you mind giving a bit of an intro, like who you are, what's your deal, what you're about?
Who am I? That's the question, right? Who am I? That's the question we should all be asking ourselves. I never know who I am, you know, because for me, life is a constant process of evolution. And I think I'm kind of enjoying the process of not getting too identified with who I think I am in the moment, so that I can allow a sort of constant process of finding out. But more in terms of human sense, born in Ghana, West Africa, father's from Ghana, mother's from Japan. I grew up in London, lived in Los Angeles for a good chunk of the last, I'd say, 21 years or so, now in Miami. And so I'm a citizen of the world. My first memories as a young boy was a couple of things. I always felt a deep calling to serve people, a deep calling to serve humanity. It was always embedded in me for some reason. I'm not sure why, but I was very sensitive. So I always felt people's pain, people's suffering quite deeply. And there was a deep desire, impulse to want to, shall I say, alleviate their suffering in some way. I wasn't sure what that would look like. I wasn't sure what I would be doing, but there was an impulse. There was a drive. Growing up in London, I would see people that seemed to have every reason to be happy. And, you know, they were rich, they were wealthy. I got a scholarship to a very prestigious school. I didn't come from a lot of money. And folks were miserable. Kids were miserable. The parents were miserable. And I didn't understand. You have every reason to be happy, but why are you not? And then I grew up around a lot of poverty, folks that didn't have very much. And yet they seemed to be happy and celebrating life and fulfilled for the most part. And so my questioning and inquiry became like, what is this about? You know, what is life about? Why are we here? What's the purpose of life? Is it just to wake up, eat, buy clothes, have sex, make babies, buy a car, buy a house, go on vacation, and then die? Like, surely there has to be more to this process called life. And that began my quest as a very young boy of just trying to figure stuff out. And, you know, one of my first memories that impacted me was seeing a crippled woman crawling on the floor, and she picks up the sand that this man walks on and wipes on her face and stands up. And week after week, I grew up a miracle, so to speak. And so week after week, I grew up seeing blind people see and deaf people hear. And, you know, the same man whose sand she picked up, look at a person with crutches and say, hey, throw your crutches away, you can walk. Or look at a person who was blind and touch their eyes and they would see. And so I grew up around this. This man was my father. He built 300 churches in Ghana, West Africa, a huge church in London of about 5,000 people. And, you know, how I started was when I was age 8, I was thrown into the audience and started speaking. And when I was 14, my father basically announced to the congregation that I was the guy taking over his ministry. I was the successor. He had about 400 or 500 people in his congregation in Africa as a whole. So it was quite a big operation. It was a huge, huge operation. So there was a lot of expectations on me. And in that moment, my entire life was carved out for me by my father and by everyone's hopes and dreams and desires and a lot of pressure. In that moment, I knew that that wasn't my path. But the truth is, I was too afraid to confront my father. I was too afraid to speak my truth. I was too afraid to... The fear was, if I really spoke my truth to my father, then I'd lose love, I'd lose the relationship, I'd be outcast, I'd be alone, I'd lose community, and I'd be abandoned. And so I said nothing. You know, I got ordained, went through this whole ceremony. It was a big deal. Everyone's happy, but something didn't feel right in my heart, you know. And when I was 18, it was a pivotal point for me. Also, during this time, I started becoming obsessed with self-help and spirituality, and probably read 800 books from 8 to 18 on spirituality, psychology, Eastern mystics, everyone from, you know, Dan Millman, Louise Hay, Jim Rohn, Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy, Jack Canfield, Marianne Williamson, Deepak Chopra, like these were my heroes, and to the Eastern mystics of Krishnamurti, Ramana Maharishi, Yogananda. And so just became fascinated with this world. And when I was 18, I had to make some decisions. Do I go to university? What am I going to do with my life? And I looked into my future, and it was a pivotal moment for me when something huge shifted. As I looked into my future, I saw that I could take the expected path for my life and follow the life that was carved out for me, you know? I could be successful living my father's version for my life. But I realized, if I become successful being someone that I'm not, if I become successful living someone else's life, what kind of success is that? That's nothing. And so my soul felt very heavy. It was like a suicide, you know? And then I looked into this unknown path, and the pull, the calling, what was pulling me, I felt like my soul pulling me in this completely unknown direction. And, you know, all I knew was I wanted to go to the US. I wanted to go to California. It was going to be between India and the US, but I thought all of the authors I'd read about happened to live in America, specifically Southern California, specifically LA or San Diego. And I wanted to come and find them and learn from them. And I figured that's the place to be. And so I felt this pull in this unknown direction, not to go to university, figured life had more to teach me. Let me go in this direction. And it was scary. It was terrifying. I had no clue what I was doing and no college education, didn't come from a rich background. I finally decided that this is my life and I had to follow my soul. And that's when my life shifted. I had the conversation with my father, didn't go too well. We didn't speak for 2 years. Sometimes people think that when you follow your purpose and you follow your dream, then everything flows and it's easy. But I think sometimes when you really follow your purpose, you know, and your soul's calling, that's when the challenges begin. You know, that's when sometimes the difficulties, the challenges begin. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're on the wrong path. I think sometimes when we follow our purpose and we're faced with the challenges, it's sort of like the universe bringing those experiences into our life to prepare our soul, to prepare us to, so that we can develop the mental, the emotional, the physical, the spiritual muscle so that we can become the person who is capable and ready of fulfilling the vision. And so I think sometimes there's a gift in those difficulties and soul tests, so to speak. And so, yeah, I told my father, we didn't speak. It was challenging. I felt so alone as a young kid, but I knew I was on the right path. I knew that even though I have nothing, I have everything because I have myself. And life to me is not worth living. Like, I knew that I would never be truly fulfilled living someone else's life. I'd never be truly fulfilled being someone that I'm not. And cut a long story short, I won a green card in the lottery, came to the U.S., green card lottery. American government gives away 55,000 green cards. Came to the U.S., two suitcases, maybe $1,000, showed up in Los Angeles, Venice Beach. No idea what I was doing. And that began my journey. Went and found teachers and mentors and healers and folks I'd read about, studied with them, learned from them. Then as I evolved over the next years, I started traveling the world in search of answers, went to Israel, studied with rabbis, went to Thailand, studied with monks, went to India, met with gurus and mystics and shamans in South America, Peru, Indonesia. And that began my journey. And that's when I started coaching people back then, 18 years ago, when working with people one-on-one, and that evolved and it grew and evolved and just kept expanding over the years. And so that's a little bit of the journey.
Man, it sounds like a movie script. It's fascinating, man. Yeah, I felt like I was getting pitched to as like a movie producer. I'm like, hey, take my money, make the film. I want to know how it ends. Yeah, but I think you've raised so many interesting topics and points there of, you know, confronting your father and potentially letting him down, going your own way without support or knowledge or anything really, trusting in the process.
Yeah.
Trusting yourself enough to take those steps. It's such a cliche question, but like, how did you deal with your father not supporting, like doing it? Like, yeah. What got you to the place of like knowing that's my path and I should go there?
You know, what, when I looked into the path of following the expected life, and my father's not a person that you argue with. He's old school African. Basically, here's the choice with my father: is my way or my way. Which one would you like? And that's my father, honestly. It's seriously, he's mellowed a bit. But that was him growing up, at least my perception of him. So you didn't really argue with him, you know? And but when I looked into my future, 20, 30 years old, 40 years old, 50, like I looked into my future and I saw the trajectory. It was so painful to feel not living in alignment with my truth. All I knew was I felt pain and I felt sadness. And that pain, you know, when I was 18, I didn't really have anything to lose. 17, 18, I didn't really have that much to lose as well. But I was innocent enough to just feel the pain of that trajectory, that the pain I just decided was not worth it. I got to a point where I realized nothing was worth my freedom, nothing. And I just had to make peace. I'm not saying it was easy. It was hard. I went around and around for 4 years of internal turmoil and depression and sadness and crying and grieving. And I finally had to get to a place where I realized this is my life. This is my incarnation. I have my lessons to learn. And I basically got to the point as a young man where I let my father go. And I, before I spoke to him, I made peace. It wasn't easy. I made peace with the fact I may never have a relationship with him again. Made peace with that. What I've realized is sometimes one of the things that can keep us stuck as human beings, keep us from evolving, keep us from being happy, keep us from being fulfilled, keep us from being free, are all the ways we actually don't tell ourselves the truth. The ways that we lie to ourselves, the ways that we bullshit ourselves, the way that we rationalize. You know, maybe you're in a relationship and it's not right. You know it's not right. Deep down, you know it's not right. It's not aligned. You're not fulfilled. You're not happy. This is not the one. This is not the person you feel you're growing with, you're evolving with. Maybe it's toxic. Maybe it's abusive. But whatever realm, you know it's not aligned, but you stay in it because maybe you've been together for so long. It's comfortable. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't. Or, you know, there's people's expectations, the family, fear of disappointing him or her. What would the family say? And so there's many moments where we know when something isn't aligned. We know the truth deep down, but we don't tell ourselves the truth as a way to preserve who we are, preserve the known, preserve ourselves, stay comfortable, keep ourselves safe. We hold on to the old. We hold on to what doesn't work. And maybe you're working a job and you know that this is not my purpose. This is not what I was put on the planet to do. And if we really let ourselves feel that, it's painful. It's actually painful to really acknowledge where we are not in alignment. It's really painful to acknowledge where we are not living the truth. To me, the pain is not bad. The pain is actually a gift. The pain is feedback. The pain is the universe giving you feedback to show you where you are not aligned. And so I felt a lot of pain because as much as I tried to rationalize and lie and, well, I can help people because I always wanted to help people. And here I had the opportunity to help people through the structure of my father's church. And so I would rationalize, well, I can still help people and I'm helping people and imagine what I could do with this platform. And yeah, something didn't feel right. And I think whenever we go against our souls, it's supposed to be painful. Pain is a signal that perhaps you're out of alignment in some way. What we tend to do as human beings is we disconnect from the pain, we rationalize the pain, we numb the pain, we smoke it away, we drink it away, we eat it away, we sex it away, we shop it away, we trap fun it away, whatever it is to just like not feel the pain. Because if we can not feel the pain, then we kind of like can keep going. And so we're constantly as human beings, not intentionally, but out of self-protection, lying to ourselves. We sometimes play this game as human beings of confusion. Like, I don't know what my purpose is. I'm not sure. I'm confused. I don't know if this person is the one. I don't know what I should do. We know what we should do. We know that the relationship's not right. Many, I don't know about you, but you know, many of us, we've been in a moment where we were in a relationship that wasn't aligned. Should I stay? Should I leave? Is it going to? The moment we break up and we would speak to our friends, like every weekend about, I don't know if this relationship is quite the one, I'm not sure. And your friends are like, come on, it's so obvious. You're like, no, I don't know, maybe we can make it. The moment we break up, we tell our friends, I knew that was never gonna work. I just knew it, you know? So there's a part of us that knows everything because at the deepest level, we are everything. And I think and it can be scary to sometimes own the deep knowing. It's a responsibility, but it can be scary because we're often afraid of the consequences of what that might mean, of disappointing, of getting hurt. And to me, we have to be willing to face the truth. To me, truth is real spirituality. Truth is real surrender. Truth is real freedom. Truth is real prayer. Truth is real yoga. Truth will set us free. It may not always be easy. And I believe I found in my life, as hard as it was for me as a kid to tell my father the truth, you know, I crawled up the stairs one day as a 17-year-old kid to confront my father. It was like killing my father. looked into his eyes, knew it, knowing I would kill him, knowing I would crush his heart, knowing I would disappoint him, knowing this might be the last time we have a connection. But I knew what I had to do. And I think many of us, we come to a moment in our lives where the life that we're living is actually too small. The structure we've created, the life that we're living is too small for what our soul is seeking to become. In that moment, when we don't expand, when we don't tell ourselves the truth, when we don't let go, when we don't surrender, the tendency is to hold on to what we know because it's safe. When we don't, that's the moment that we block the flow. That's the moment we constipate our soul. That's the moment we block our blessings. Holding on to that which doesn't work is just our affirmation of our lack of trust in the universe. And holding on to that which doesn't work keeps us stuck where we are at. So there comes a moment for all of us, if we're growing and evolving, that we have to take that leap. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's saying, you know what, I'm going to quit my job. Maybe it's giving up that addiction. Whatever it might be, there comes a courageous moment that we have to face and tell ourselves the truth. So just what I would invite everyone to do is sit with these two or three questions. Number one, what lies am I telling myself? So just sit with it to face it. How you know you're lying to yourself, likely whether you're conscious or not, is you will feel some pain. Sometimes that pain will be emotional, energetic, mental pain in terms of your mood and how you feel, maybe depression. Sometimes that pain will manifest because we suppress it so deeply. Sometimes that pain will manifest in the physical body as physical pain that is trying to tell us, you're off balance, you're out of alignment, something's not right, there's fear here. So that pain will manifest as physical pain or manifest as dis-ease or illness. The body is speaking. And so what lies am I telling myself? What am I pretending to not know? And what is it costing me? And to really, as I was saying, feel the cost of the lie. To really feel it, to let it touch you, to don't disconnect from it. When we really feel the pain of the lie that we're telling ourselves, that can start the momentum of us beginning to make a shift. And really, that's kind of what I did without knowing it. You know, it was painful. I felt the pain. I felt it all, but it wasn't easy. You know, when I finally had the conversation with my dad, he didn't scream. It would have been easy if he just yelled, screamed, threw stuff. He just said, "Are you sure?" I was like, whoa. And I had a moment. I had a moment that I could like, well, maybe I'm not sure. Let me think about it. And that's the moment I realized the doors were open for my soul to run free on its towards its true destiny. And I said nothing. And then I said, yes. He said, okay. And I walked out. We didn't speak. It was simple as that. But I really believe that when we, and honestly, I sat in my room and I cried. It wasn't like a happy moment. Because now I felt like I was completely in the unknown, like no idea what I'm going to do, no idea where I'm going to go. No, I felt I had a deep vision and a dream in my soul and in my heart to, I wanted to inspire the world. You know, I felt I had this vision, like God, the universe had given me this dream, but I didn't know, here I am, 18, 17. I had no idea how the hell I was going to do it. Now I have nothing. I remember feeling so alone, like I had been abandoned by the universe. And I sat there in my room. The only person that supported me was my mother. I sat there in my room and I prayed, said, God, you've given me this vision. You know, what do I do? The next day, I go to the library of my school and I'm still meditating on how do I get to America? And that's when literally someone hands me a magazine called The Economist and I feel chills. I look in the back and it says the American government's giving away 55,000 green cards. And that's when I just knew something bigger than me is happening. Something bigger than my own conscious mental intention is unfolding. And I just began to follow the pull. I just began to follow the energy. I just began to be true to this is the direction that the universe is moving me, you know? And for me, that was living surrender. I was living surrender without even knowing what it was. But I realized that's kind of how I've always lived my life and won a green card. And I really feel that when we really surrender to our deepest truth, when we really choose to not compromise our soul's integrity and we go in the direction of what our soul is guiding us, then we bring ourselves into the flow. Then we bring ourselves into divine alignment. Then we bring ourselves into the flow that is already happening. And I have found that that's when nature, you know, the universe begins to support us. Doesn't do it all for us, but it begins to support us on our journey. Then we're not like swimming like against the wave. We're actually swimming with the wave. And that's what I found.
It sounds like the magic of surrender.
Yeah.
Which is the title of your new book. I think that's a really powerful gateway to talk about that and finding the courage to let go. Yeah. But another question that came up, and I love that you asked, what do you pretend not to know?
Sure.
That was actually, someone commented that on Instagram on a post of mine. And I was like, wow, I love that. And then she's like, oh, it's not mine. It's Coop Blackson's. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I need to get that dude on the podcast. So that's actually why we're sitting here right now.
Cool. Say thanks to her.
Yeah, I need to. But also you touched on a question that I often ask, which is like, how do you define success?
How do I define success?
So like I ask that to myself or to clients is like, what do you want? How do you define success? Because for you, you had the opportunity to like run a church and live that life and have the white picket fence and your dad's version of success. But it sounds like for you, there was a deeper soul calling.
So yeah, to me, I think it's an important question that for us to define for ourselves, because I think in our culture today, success is defined for us by our parents, by generations, by our grandparents, and if not by them, by media, by CNN, Fox News media, by entertainment, by rappers, by singers, by celebrities, you know, by magazines. And if we're not careful, if we're not conscious, if we're not aware, we've been programmed in terms of what success is, and then we end up not living our true version of success. To me, success is living in alignment with your deepest truth. To me, success is living in alignment with your authentic self and expressing that truly, authentically, without compromise. Being who you really are. Because what I saw is, what is the use of having all this success and fame and da-da-da-da-da that I could potentially have if I don't have myself? How the hell am I going to look myself in the mirror in the middle of the night? Sure, I might be successful in everyone's eyes, but if I can't look myself in the mirror in the middle of the night when no one is around and feel good inside of my own skin, but I have $50 million, what kind of success is that? You know, if I'm just hating myself inside because of who I needed to be and what I needed to do to attain some version of success that I was programmed to believe. So in our culture, we tend to have been programmed. There's a paradigm of success. I call it the old paradigm of success that is all about achievement, goal orientation, you know, how much money you have, your body, how you look, car, status, fame, which is all really based on ego. Okay. To me, I'm not anti-material. There's nothing wrong with making $1 billion or having a nice car or having a great body. Nothing wrong with that at all. It's all great. But I think that is the kind of definition of success that we've been programmed to believe. And now we set our intention and goals to achieve the program of what we believe success to be. And so we ask ourselves, well, what do I want? And many of us, we've achieved, you know, we've achieved the things that we thought we wanted to get. Maybe you've had this experience where you really thought, I really want that thing. I really want that girl. I really want that house. I really want that project. I really want that success. I really want, and you achieved it. And you sat there and you went, I'm not really happy. Wait a second. This was not really, I thought this was what I wanted, but this was not really what I wanted. And so many times what we think we want, success, what how we've been conditioned to define success, what we think we want is just what we think we want, based on who we think we are, which is just a conditioned version of what we really are. And so if we're not in touch with who we really are, our authentic nature, our true self, because we're wrapped up in patterns and layers of conditioned identity from childhood, from generations, from parents, from grandparents, etc., then our perceptual filter to determine what authentic success is also going to be a little off, you know? And so I think the foundation of true authentic success is getting in touch with who you really are. True success is being who you are, living who you are, expressing who you are, fulfilling your true purpose in this lifetime, you know, and living in integrity with your being. Then I think no matter what happens, what I found is you will always have a level of peace in your heart, no matter what happens in the area of results or the material. Now, I believe that essentially we are souls. You know, we are souls, consciousness, energy. We're souls that incarnate into this human experience, and we take on this vehicle, the spacesuit called Coot. You know, Jeff, Matt, Susie, whatever the label of the spacesuit happens to be in this incarnation. And so we incarnate as souls because on some level there's certain maybe lessons that we're here to learn and evolve through and go through. And to me, if life is a school, life is a classroom for our soul, life is a university for our soul to learn lessons, and every single situation and person and experience is a opportunity to grow, learn, and evolve. So for me, part of how I see success is not just on, we'll call it the goal line, right? Which is where most of mainstream society lives, the goal line, achievement, you achieve the goal, you stay married, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the goal line. But I feel there's like a soul line. And at that level of the soul line is really about the degree to which we become aware, we understand, and we learn the lessons and the necessary lessons for which we incarnated, the degree to which we learn and evolve through and transcend and work out and graduate from the lessons for which every single situation and experience shows up in our life. And so that could mean a relationship. So like we often think success is, you stay together with someone forever. But I know people that are together forever and they're freaking miserable and they hate each other. And the only reason they're not leaving is money, is status, is what will people think. That's it. But they hate each other's guts and they're not growing and evolving anymore. What kind of success is that? You know, so even in relationship, right, we have this definition of success that it lasts forever. But I think even in a relationship, we attract to us someone who's a mirror manifestation of aspects of ourselves. We attract that person because there's some lessons we need to learn. So to me, success, let's say in a relationship example, would be you coming together with someone for the particular moment of time, however long you and that person are meant to be together. And because there's certain lessons you have to teach each other. And so success would be learning those lessons, growing, evolving, you know, expanding your consciousness and becoming, through the relationship, becoming more of who you really are. And I believe that when and if, it doesn't have to end, but when you've learned the lessons for which that person has shown up in your life, then perhaps the relationship might be over. That's not a failure. That's not like, oh, you failed, I'm sorry. That's actually, you've graduated that classroom, you know? Let's say when you finish high school, grade 12, you don't say to someone, oh, I'm so sorry. I feel so bad that you have to leave high school. You're like, congratulations, you graduated, you learned the lesson. And so to me, success, I think we have to reimagine success as to include a more evolutionary context than just achieved it, didn't achieve it, to no matter what happens. Yes, it's great to achieve the goal. It's great to have a bestseller. It's great that a relationship lasts. It's great that you get the car. It's great that you get your goal. But I think it's important to reimagine success to see, am I growing and evolving? Am I learning the lesson? Am I learning the lesson for which this situation is showing up, for which this relationship is showing up? And am I becoming more of who I really am? Because if we're not, but we're making more money, if we're not, but we're in relationship, then to me, I don't see that as true success.
Following up on some of that, how do you recommend or suggest people separate or distinguish their inner truth from the conditioning that they have taken on from society, culture, family, etc.? Like, how do we help people to identify that deeper knowing?
The deeper knowing, yeah, I think it's an interesting question. The degree to which we're conditioned, I would say, is the degree to which we're not free. And we think we're free, you know, like, oh, hey, I'm a free person. I got free will. I can do what I want, whenever I want. Wait a second. If we were really free, and I ask people, it's kind of friends, I ask friends, if you were really free, you think you're free, right? If you're a really free human being with free will, true free will, look at your relationships. They're like, yeah. Would you have chosen that person? Like, you chose that person. How much free will is that? You chose that crazy psychopath person, like, out of free will. So we think we're free, but we don't realize that we're conditioned. So let me just kind of break down conditioning for a moment. As children, we are these, let's say, infinite expansive beings, right? Where you look into a child's eyes, they're in touch with their essence, they're in touch with their true nature. I think that's a reason why when we look into a child's eyes, we melt, we expand, we're reminded of who we really are. You can't look into a child's eyes and not just open to something, because it's a reflection of what we all were, pure, kind of unconditioned, in touch with the divine, our true nature, right? You could put a child in front of Pablo Escobar and, you know, he's going to melt. It doesn't really matter. The hardened criminal is just going to melt when they see their child. So they're in touch with that free, unconditioned essence, their true nature. Then we're born. We float down. Then we're born into this incarnation. We meet our parents. You know, some of our parents are a little crazy here and there. They're doing the best that they can do. Our parents, they're conditioned, right? They're conditioned from their parents and their parents and their parents and generations. And so now we're born into a sort of generational framework of conditioning, a soup, a generational soup of conditioning, a framework that we're born into. Boom. Automatically, the conditioning begins. Conscious, unconscious, verbal, non-spoken, the conditioning begins. And our parents are now raising us based on the conditioning that maybe they don't even know they have. Be this way, don't be this way. Believe this, believe that. You know, white people are this, black people are this, Asian people are this, they go there, money's bad, sex is wrong. This is it, boom. And some of it's not even spoken. It's just what we see, what we observe. And so we're born into this framework. Then on top of that, maybe dad's an alcoholic and mom's crazy, or maybe mom has mental illness and dad is, you know, aloof. Maybe it's not that extreme. Maybe there's a sexual abuse. Maybe there's emotional abuse. Maybe it's not that extreme. Maybe parents are fighting. Maybe they're just not around and we don't have the emotional connection. And so two things happen. Number one, the first thing that starts happening is, as children, because we're born into maybe a dysfunction of some sort. As human beings, there's some kind of dysfunction somewhere. So we're born into a framework. And as a way to cope, survive, and function, we start, first thing we do is we start learning how to cope with the pain that we're not necessarily equipped to cope with, because it's painful to see mom and dad screaming, or no one's around loving me the way I need to have my needs met. And like, this is painful, so I don't know how to deal with it. And so as children, what we start doing is we start learning all sorts of defense mechanisms to shut down and not feel. Shut down, not feel, shut down, not feel, shut down, not feel, rejection, shut down, not feel. And this just accumulates over time, over 18, accumulate. So we learn a pattern of shutting down, disconnecting, not feeling. And the feelings that we don't feel don't really go anywhere. They just stay stuck in our body, stuck in our nervous system. They begin to cover up. And the emotions start to create layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer around our heart. So now our true light, our true essence, our true heart, our true capacity to love, our true connection to our feeling, intuition, emotion is now buried underneath the mountains and mountains and mountains and layers of unprocessed feelings. So now we're not fully connected to this source of intuition. We're not connected to the source of who we are necessarily. It's there, but we're not truly in touch with it because it's covered up under a mountain of conditioning. So that's kind of one thing that starts happening. The other thing that starts happening that also starts disconnecting us from that source of intuition, of knowing, is we also then go out into the world from the sense of, well, it's unconscious. Who do I need to be in order to be loved? Oh, when I'm loud, dad screams. or maybe it's not even an obvious, when I'm loud and vocal and stand up for myself, I get a look from mom. And that look, you know, makes me feel I'm not loved. So I don't want to not be loved. So who do I need to be in order to get love, validation, and approval? Oh, let me be quiet. Oh, let me be in the background. Oh, let me say nothing. Oh, let me be polite. Oh, let me be a good boy. Oh, let me be perfect. Oh, let me take care of everyone. So if I take care of everyone and they say, wow, what a good boy you are, then you're going to get so much love and validation. So we start contorting ourselves into a shape, right? We went from this free, expansive being to like suppressing. Then we start contorting ourselves into a shape, developing a mask, developing a role, developing a persona, developing a way of being, a character that we start to contort ourselves into. Then we hold tightly onto that and identify that as me. Then we say, but this is me. This is who I am. I'm just shy. I'm just funny. I'm just, you know, tough. I'm just independent. I'm just this way. And now we go through life conditioned to be this person. And you can see why now we don't have the full connection to our capacity to love. Now we don't have the full connection to our freedom to speak our voice. Now we don't have the full connection to, like, why am I not feeling intuitive? Because now there's layers and layers and layers and layers of conditioning that is kind of clouding our clear seeing and our clear perception. And so that's why I said the degree to which we are conditioned is the degree to which we are not free to really see clearly and choose clearly. We just think we are, but we're not. You see, from childhood, every single thing that happens to us, every single thing that happens to us gets stored in our nervous system. Everything. That means things we don't even remember. The smells, mom screaming, mom's crying, mom's mood, the music we listen to, things dad said about women, things mom said about sex, things that were said about money. It's just in a dinner table conversation. Everything gets stored in our nervous system. Boom, it's there. And the nervous system is really the antenna to the world. So information comes in. The nervous system then interprets that information and begins to make, shall we say, meaning about what was just said, about what we just experienced, about what we just saw. And so from that point, we begin to determine what reality is, thinking reality is what we see. But reality is not necessarily what we see. Reality is the interpretation of what we made up based on the kind of state of our nervous system, the level of our conditioning. And so our intuition, which was kind of where you started, our intuition is then affected and clouded, and our ability to feel out my truth. Well, if you think you are this, then what's my truth? Whose truth are you tuning into? Conditioned version of yourself, right? My truth. Whose truth? And so we think we are this person, and then we think that our truth is based on that identity. And I'm simply saying it's not. We are not our conditioning. We are not our programming. We are not the roles and masks and personalities that we've been conditioned to play. And so I think the more we can become aware that I'm conditioned, okay, no judgment, and begin to explore that conditioning, question that conditioning, question our belief systems, question what we think about ourselves, question ourselves, then have the willingness and the courage to begin exploring the feelings that we perhaps haven't dealt with and resolved and we're carrying that is blocking, that's still blocking inside of us, then I think we're able to begin layer by layer, which is a life process, right? Layer by layer, begin releasing and letting go. That's why I say I don't really coach people. I don't really teach people. I uncoach, I unteach, I uncondition. Because I think each layer, as we start unconditioning ourselves, the clearer our nervous system becomes, the clearer our perceptual capacity becomes to actually navigate and feel what my truth, my real truth, not my conditioned truth based on a conditioned identity, but what my real truth is. And I think the deeper we go into that, the real essence, real intuition, real truth arises from the unconditioned depth and impulse of our being, not necessarily our personality. And there's a difference. And many times when the deeper truth arises, which may not always make sense to the personality, we're like, do this. Why? Go here. Why? It doesn't make sense because it's not conditioned and filtered by past programming, past experiences, fear, you know, resistance is just arising from somewhere deeper. So if a deeper truth arises, usually it will have a different texture, a different feeling, a different sense, because it's not coming from you. It's not coming from the you that you identify yourself to be. It's coming from you, the real you that's free. And so I think if we can follow that, align with that, you know, align our actions with that, that's when life gets it. That's when we start experiencing the magic. If we can surrender to that, that's when we are in the flow. And one of the things we have to give up to truly surrender in that is giving the willingness to give up the need to know. The need to constantly know everything and what everything means is one of the limitations that blocks us from really following this deeper, the deeper truth, not what we think our truth is, but a deeper truth. I got to know, what does this mean? Where's this going? What's this relation? Why? Why not? Well, and all of a sudden we've now conditioned ourselves out of that deeper truth because we're afraid. And so giving up the need to know and embracing the unknown fully, not as some woo-woo concept, but I really believe the degree to which we can embrace the unknown is the degree to which we're free. And so that doesn't mean you sit on your couch and do nothing. I'm just going to sit on my couch, listen to this interview. Let me just, I don't know. No. It means you feel your deepest truth based on the level of your consciousness, the work you've done. You feel your deepest truth and you start leaning in, trusting the pull, following the energy of life, not your mind. Your mind might say, go here, but like the energy, the wave is going here. I want the wave to go here, but the wave is going here. And you follow that wave, you lean in, and then you take a step and you go in that direction. You go in that direction. You keep moving in that direction. And then just life begins to reveal itself to us in the process. And so I think we don't always have to know where we're going to get to where we need to be, but there's an intelligence that knows. And so those are just some things to answer your question.
Is there an example from your own life recently in which you have discovered a deeper truth or you've had an epiphany about some conditioning?
A couple of things, because I think it relates to what we're talking about. This was not the book I thought I was going to write, okay? I had all sorts of ideas of what I thought I was going to write. The book I thought I should write is not this book right here. I had all of these ideas as to, I remember one day I literally wrote on a wall, a whiteboard, right? I had a wall-sized whiteboard, crazy ideas, 200 ideas. It's going to be this, it's going to be that. Great, this book would sell, that concept would sell, people would love that. Oh my, amazing ideas. But one day in my writing process, way back a few years ago, the soul of the book just revealed itself to me like that. The soul of the book revealed itself to me and came through loud and clear, undeniable. And I had to surrender and go, okay, I guess this is the book that is seeking to be written, rather than this is the book I want to write. This is the book that is seeking to be written. And then I had to align my ego, my mind, my actions to in service to the energy of the book that was seeking to be written. And I think when we follow that flow, things start happening that we can't even imagine. I mean, that was one example. In the last year, after having lived in Los Angeles for 21, 2 years, I was guided to leave LA. Pandemic hit, it's like LA went nuts. I was guided, I didn't want to leave. I'll be honest, I didn't. I love LA, I thought I'm gonna live in LA, I'll die in LA, but I was guided. Sometimes the guidance doesn't come with a big siren bell, right? It's not like, time to take it. No, it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes the guidance is just a gentle whisper But if we're not paying attention, we won't catch it. We will not even think it's that important. We will downplay it. So we have to start paying attention to the constant clues and nudgings of which sometimes the sensations, the feeling, the clues show up in life. And so I was guided to leave LA. Made no sense to my mind. I don't want to leave. Something felt that way. I had a house in Phoenix. Something said, go stay in that house. I ended up, a couple of things. I ended up letting go of my apartment in downtown LA. A few weeks later, I saw the riots in LA happening outside my building, destroying my building. Whoa, that was an interesting close moment. So left LA, didn't want to leave. Surrendering, following the flow, not making sense. Went to stay in my house in Phoenix, didn't want to do it, felt right. And then ended up, cut a long story short, and in a relationship with a woman that year, because that was just the flow. Then ended up, guided to come to Miami. Same feeling. Something said, go to Miami. I had no intention to move to Miami. It wasn't even on my radar. Something said, go check it out. Okay, don't need to know. Going to follow the flow. Came here for a few days. One thing led to the next thing, led to the next thing. Sold my house in Phoenix. Ended up in Miami. Boom, everything is in the flow. And so, you know, that's the flow. So for me, really, life flows when we allow life to lead us. As human beings, we are constantly trying to control life. Control is the master addiction. We're trying to control how people perceive us. We're trying to control what people think about us. We're trying to control how many likes we get on social media. We're trying to control our spouse. We're trying to control our children, we're trying to control our bodies, we're trying to control the weather, we're trying to control God through our meditation and prayer, we're trying to control our pet goldfish. Control is like an addiction. But if we really, really look at our lives, how often did control bring us freedom? If we really look at our lives, how often did controlling make us fulfilled? If we really look at, all it tends to lead to is stress, anxiety, disconnection, frustration, you know, burnout, right? It doesn't lead to fulfillment, freedom, expansion, bliss, love. No. And so I think it's important that we realize that. And so that's why I'm so excited about this calling I feel to inspire people to a different way of living. See, we sometimes think that surrender is weak. Oh, here's the fear. If I surrender, shit won't work out. Well, shit ain't working out half the time anyway. You know, if we really look at our lives, especially when we try to force things, if I surrender, things won't work out. If I surrender, I won't get what I want. If I surrender, my dreams won't happen. If I surrender, I won't get that thing. If I surrender, then I'm going to be homeless and I'm going to be living in downtown LA in the Himalayas. If I surrender, and I'm actually saying, yeah, but if you surrender, what if you got even more? Not less, even more than you can imagine. Because the you that is imagining what you want, goals, success, the you that's imagining the life that you want to experience is actually limited. Is limited to the past, is limited to conditioning, is limited to this moment, is limited to the identity of the ego. And so for me, the invitation is when we surrender, we stop negotiating with life. When we surrender, we take the limits off of life. When we surrender truly, we open ourselves beyond trying to force life to be a certain way. We often try to force things that aren't to be. I'm going to force this relationship to be. I'm going to force this person to be. I'm going to force life into my idea, my little box based on little old me. Of what I think it should be. It's got to be this. And then I have found we end up limiting the bigness of life. We end up limiting the infinite possibilities of life from happening because we're so attached to this one outcome. We're so attached to this one idea. We're so attached that life's got to look this way. So part of surrender is the willingness to let go of the idea of who we think we should be. The willingness to let go of the idea of the the life we think we should be living, right? For many of us, there's this idea of the life that we think we should be living that we're not living, but we think we should be living. Then we don't really fully rest into the life we have and the life that's seeking to happen. Let to the willingness to let go of the idea of who we think someone else should be, so that we can be fully present right here and open to what it is that is seeking to happen. To me, life is what's happening. Life is what's seeking to happen. And I think when we surrender, we live in a state of curiosity and openness. I have found what life can do through you is more than what you can do on your own. If you look at Mandela, I mean, look at the great ones. They all at some moment got to a point where they had to surrender. They surrendered to life. They surrendered to their deepest truth. They surrendered to their soul's purpose. They surrendered to that which was bigger than themselves. There's no way Mother Teresa, this little old woman, could have just done this on her own personal power. There's no way Mandela could have just done this on his own personal power. But they had to surrender to more than themselves. And look, because they got themselves out of the way, just look. Look what life manifested through them. Mandela, we're still talking about him. He's dead, but he shook the world. So I think when we surrender, we expand and open to infinite possibilities, and that's when miracles happen. That's when life can use us and move through us and create through us, activate through us, love through us, create through us. Then we are open to life. That's the magic, you know? It's an opening to greatness.
Coot Blackson, you're just so wonderful. I love listening to you, man. I feel like I get a private TED talk for an hour just now. It was great. But I am conscious of time, and we talked before that
we're good.
Is there anything that you need to mention? I know you've got a new book out all about surrender. Anything that you haven't touched on already that you want to highlight?
No, I just think surrender is the password to freedom, man. You know,
that's it.
Surrender is the password to freedom. Surrender is not weak. I believe it's the most powerful thing we can do to open ourselves to life itself. And I think when we do that, you know, it's not a passive thing. Look at Muhammad Ali, right? Champion of the world. He surrendered to his deepest truth. He wasn't in alignment with the Vietnam War. So he's like, you know what? I'm gonna let go. That was his surrender, right? Look at Greta Thunberg, the climate change activist, young girl. She's like, no one's doing anything about this issue. Okay, her surrender was, I'm just going to take a sign and stand outside of an embassy just by myself. Just taking that one small action, that's surrender. She could have been like, well, who am I? What difference am I going to make? You know, I don't have enough money and resource. I don't have an Instagram following. I'm not going to do it. She could have resisted. But surrender is the willingness to do what you can with what you have in this moment of your life, exactly as you are. Don't think that any action you take is too small, because to me, life is a symphony. And everyone's playing their role in this great orchestra of life. Yes, there's the conductor, and there's the guitarist, and there's the violinist, and there's the saxophone, and there's the, you know, clarinet, and the cello, and the drums. And like, whoa, that person's got the, yeah. But if you look at even a symphony, there is that person, right, who just plays the chime or the ching, the little cymbal. It's like, that's all they do the entire 3 hours of this orchestra extravaganza. Ching. Is that person less important? Is the person who spoke to Greta about climate change less important than her? And so we sometimes think, well, what difference can I make? And I believe we have to surrender to our soul, to do our part, and not worry about the outcome. Do 100% of what you feel called to do. Don't worry about the outcome. because you don't know how the universe will unfold and move and what have you. So if I do my part, if I don't do my part and you don't do your part and we don't surrender to doing our part, then how does the world evolve? What if, you know, Martin Luther King said, I'm not going to do my part. We all have a part to play in this beautiful orchestra of life. And for me, I'm just, you know, I want everyone to surrender to just, let's say, doing their part, but also getting themselves out the way, I should say even more clearly, so that they can let life do them, let life live through them. Then you move from a place of, well, it's my life, my little old life, to say, you know what? It's no longer about what I want for myself. Then the question becomes, what is it that life wants to express through me? What is it that life wants to create through me? And being open to a deeper question. When we're open to a deeper question, then I believe we will be used in deeper ways. And for me, that's what's exciting, is a magic of surrender. So it's I think surrender is a powerful thing that will catapult us into living our true soul's purpose and destiny. And that's really what I want for the world.
Mm. I love that. I love that idea about Greta Thunberg, like whoever taught her. Imagine her science teacher was like, I don't feel like getting out of bed today. It's just about right. climate change. We're never going to fix climate change. What purpose does it serve? And then you skip the lesson and you skip the student and all of it goes haywire. But
The ripples.
Brother, where can people find you on the internet? Website.
The new book is out, and so they can go to, everyone can, obviously it's on Amazon, but you can go to www.themagicofsurrender.com. That's themagicofsurrender.com. Read about the book there. It's available for now, depending on when you listen to it, but pre-order, it's available. Once you get your book, enter your name and receipt, and you'll receive a whole bunch of free gifts. So many free gifts. Nice. I don't even remember what the free gifts are. But there's, you know, literally a seminar I'm giving away, PDF, a meditation, videos, the list goes on. So nice. I really wanted to help people integrate surrender practically into their life. My other website, kublackson.com, find out more about my work. www.boundlessblissbody.com, find out about a deep dive training I do. And yes, follow me on Instagram. Say hi. Follow me on Facebook. Yeah. Kublackson.
I'll put links to that in the show notes. If you're listening, you can just click below, get in this man's world. And brother, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed that. And I have a tremendous respect and admiration for who you are and what you've done and how you've done it. It's been really powerful to spend an hour with you, man. Thank you.
Pleasure. Remember in the introduction, I told you how good that episode was. I do not lie to you about podcast episodes that I love. That is fact. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope your soul is shining brightly after it was spit-shined by Coot Blackson for an hour. I hope your heart didn't burst from all the love and ideas that are now contained within it. As mentioned, Coot has a new book coming out. I haven't read it yet, but I've included links in the show notes to it. I've read his first one called You Are the One. It's excellent. And I've included links in the show notes. Check those out. You can follow Coot. You can get involved in his life. Check out his various talks and things. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. If you'd like to hear me, I am on Instagram at Long Distance Love Bombs. Thanks for the 5-star reviews. Every little bit helps. Thanks for sharing it, tagging me in it. I so appreciate your support and I'm really grateful that you're here. Thanks for letting me talk to you for a little bit. Obviously, I didn't talk too much in that episode, which was wonderful. I felt like my own private pep talk, you know? Like I was in an audience of a TED talk, and it was just me. Super good stuff. Thanks for being here, and I will talk to you soon.